Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hello and welcome to Book Cheat, the book club podcast where I've read the book so you don't have to. My name is Dave Warnicke, and on each episode of this show we look at one of the classics. And joining us to look at such a classic this week, it's a couple of classic guests, would you believe? It's classic Matt Stewart and classic Kirsty Weber.
Wow.
Yes, we're original flavoured Kirsty and Matt.
Yeah, we are.
Anything? Classic Coke? Can you edit this bit out? Let's go again. Hey Kirsty, how's it going?
G'day.
It's been a while since I've been here with the book chook, so feeling a little rusty.
Yeah, this is the first one back in a few months. I took the comedy festival off, you know, to focus on the show, and then went on holiday, and it, just the gap sort of dragged out a bit. Well, we're back now. It's a new season, new me, new guests. How are you feeling?
Great. I'm so thrilled to be here at the first one back after the gap, or the chasm, if you will.
Yeah, it started as a gap.
And turned into it.
But now
exactly.
It spiraled out of control.
The problem is I gave myself an inch and I just kept grabbing inches, you know. It just got bigger and bigger and bigger.
Okay, we don't want to hear about what happened on your holiday. Okay.
So to speak. But yeah, we're back now and I've got some new episodes coming out. You know, over the coming months, on holiday I was reading Up a Storm, so I'm quite a few books ahead, so.
Okay.
It's great.
Good on you.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, but, you just came in here to brag at his reading. Yeah, well done.
Well, I'd love to have the luxury of being able to pull out a book from time to time, Dave. But I've got some stuff going on, actually, if you don't mind.
Well, no, that's the best part about this show is you don't have to read anymore. I'm here for you.
Oh, what a relief.
What a relief. Give it up.
What a relief. Okay. Oh, I'm sorry for lashing out at you.
No, I wasn't meant to be bragging. I was meant to be soothing you all. Taking
Dave.
That stress away, saying, hey, I know you've had to read to yourself over the last 4 or 5 months, but don't worry. I'm back.
Matt and I were bang out of order and we've both taken a few seconds out to think about our conduct. We'd both like to extend an apology to you and hopefully our behaviour will improve over the course of this episode, but it might not.
It might not.
Yeah, yeah.
Great. We should say it's a conditional apology. We're sorry if we offended you.
Yeah. We're sorry if you took offence.
Yes. Oh, okay. You've done this before.
I victim blamed several times. Don't you worry. We're sorry if you're a snowflake, Dave.
Yeah. Okay. Guilty as charged.
Okay. If you're not tough enough, then we are guests. We're sorry, little. Yeah. Little flower petal.
Your delicate flower, we will tread more lightly.
Thank
moving
you.
Moving forward.
Please, stop treading on me, please.
What are we talking about, Dave? This is a book.
This is a book.
Is that what this show is?
Yes, I'm going to tell
it's
you about
too long.
I'm going to tell you about a book very, very soon, but I'm going to tell you about a book in Brisbane soon too, Matt, because I'm coming back with this episode and the next one will be a live one recorded in Brisbane, but the people at home, they can come along.
Oh, that's
no
so
way.
Exciting.
Yes.
If those people are in Brisbane, Good Chat Comedy Club. It's one of the best comedy clubs in Australia, I reckon.
We love it up there.
It's a belter.
And, yes, we're doing your show on the Sunday, the 3rd of September, and my show, Who Knew It, Matt Stewart, on the
Saturday,
the 2nd of September. I forgot. It's the day before. Pretty easy to remember. And then we're doing a stand-up show afterwards on each night as well.
That's right, and we'll be guests on each other's pods as well as some other special guests. And going to have a great time. Can you believe this?
Would you call it a Matt Stewart and Dave Warnicke comedy bonanza weekend?
Yeah, absolutely would.
Comedy bonanza in Brisbane weekend.
Yeah.
That is definitely what we should have called it. But what the poster says is you see Who Knew It at 5:30 and then later that night you will come along to see the Matt Stewart Comedy Hour featuring Dave Warnicke.
Wow.
Can you believe it? This year I made the poster. Last year was just the Matt Stewart Comedy Hour with special guest TBC.
I should say, Kirstie, that Dave suggested that title.
I thought it was, it's so okay. funny. Okay. It's so funny. It's the Matt Stewart Comedy
Hour. I think
Hour.
We'll be doing equal stage time.
Yeah, yeah, we will.
But I'm really wearing the all the pressure of ticket sales. It's all my face.
That's true. I also love the idea of traveling with one mate and managing to turn that partnership, that interstate yeah. travel partnership, into 19 unique shows.
I think that's good. You got to, yeah. It's and like Marge on that episode of The Simpsons where she had one dress and she cut it into oh, yeah. 17 different versions. That's Dave and I on a trip.
You're like, at 2 o'clock on Saturday, it'll be Dave Warnocky interviews Matt Stewart.
Yeah.
And then at 3 o'clock on Sunday, Matt Stewart will interview Dave Warnocky.
And for the true diehards, 11 a.m., we're going out for a brunch. You can come along. Obviously.
Hit us up.
Pay for your own meal. Pay for our meal.
Yeah. If you're paying for ours, then you're definitely welcome.
This is great. Yeah. I love it.
Well, because we only get up there maybe once a year, so we just try and maximize our time up
yeah.
there.
And 18 shows.
Yeah, that's right. We do a year's worth of shows in one afternoon.
Tickets available on dogoonpod.com.
That's right. Our website, dogoonpod.com.
Are you up in Brisbane coming up? Where are you going?
Yeah, I'm coming up in Brisbane soon. I'm also going to Good Chat Comedy Club.
What a place.
We love it up there.
I love it, yeah. I'm there in October, so I'm there the 19th and 20th of October. I'm doing a work in progress show, so all my new material for my tour for next year. Uh-oh. And
and just to confirm, 19 and 20, over those 2 days, how many shows will you be doing?
Well, originally I was doing two, but having just spoken to both of you, I think I'm going to try and stack it with 13 more on each
yeah,
day.
Exactly.
So I'll be shooting for 28 shows across the 2 days.
You'd be thinking, David Matt, surely what you've done here is you've put one show on, it's sold out, you've added a second, sold out, third, sold out. That is absolutely not the case. We've done four up front and now... We are panicking that we've spread ourselves a bit thin. So please do hit up dogoonpod.com and click buy those tickets. That would be fantastic.
Those shows are going to be so sick. Like, you owe it to yourselves to excited. Purchase some tickets and go. And also, you've got so many opportunities across the weekend to see them. Yeah. Even if you just choose four of the shows to attend, that'll still be great. Yeah, you don't have to go to all 37.
It's like a four-park super pass. You pick your favourite four, any four.
Now you're putting it into terms that Queenslanders understand. Yeah.
If I were up in Brisbane next weekend at the same time as you two, I think the show that I'd go and see is the 6 a.m. on Sunday. Mm. Good Morning Pilates and Comedy with Dave and Matt. I think that's the one I'd go to.
Oh, bottomless mimosas. It's going to be a great morning.
I will not be wearing pants. That's what that means, right?
Yeah.
And Kirstie, you got a new podcast as well. Did you know that?
Do I? Oh, my God. Oh, no. How often does it come out?
I think it's weekly at this stage.
Oh, no. That
every
feels like
week.
A lot of work.
Yeah,
every
regret.
7 days.
Yeah. Do what Dave does and just take a break for, forever or whatever.
Keep grabbing those inches or what I said before.
Well, we've released 5 episodes, so I think we'll probably have a 2 to 3 year sabbatical now.
Yeah. You're a bit tired.
I've got a new podcast with my dear friend and fellow comedian, Cal Wilson. It's called You'll Never Believe This But, and it's essentially about people's unbelievable stories. So it was inspired by the fact I am absolutely positive that I saw the Otway Panther, which is a panther that allegedly roams the Otway's mountain ranges in Victoria down here. And I'm adamant that I saw it. Cal is one of the loveliest people in the world and one of the most gullible people in the world, but she does not believe me, and I've been battling her for many years about how I saw this panther. And so then we started talking about unbelievable stories, and essentially listeners can send us stories in, and if you have a listen to the podcast and you enjoy it and you would like to send us a story, it's myunbelievablestory@gmail.com. And we get guests in every few episodes. We've done 5 now. This week's episode had Claire Hooper on it. That was a hoot. But, yeah, it's super fun. We've gotten loads of listener submissions and we just have a laugh and a chat about people's stories. But not
it.
In a mean-spirited way, because I am on board with everything.
I'm imagining the dynamic is that you're the Fox Mulder who believes absolutely everything.
Yeah.
Maybe Cal's more of a Dana Scully being like, I don't know, Mulder.
There's got to be another explanation, Mulder.
But you're going, yeah, I believe it.
It's almost like you've listened to the podcast, you two.
I love it.
I know you've got 18 podcasts between you, so I know that you absolutely haven't listened to it, but it's almost like you have.
It's hard to listen to one because we're always recording one.
Yes.
Exactly.
So whenever I listen to one, it's while I'm recording. And yes. it gets a bit messy, but I can do it.
Should we put one of my episodes on the background now while we're recording Book Cheat?
That's a great idea.
I mean, why do you think I'm wearing these headphones? What do you think I'm listening to right now? It's not my own voice.
Just turn it to, if you want to hear Kirstie's podcast, turn it over to your left speaker.
Choose your own podcast adventure. I love it. All right. Should we talk about a story? Today I'm going to tell you about a classic short story. Does this title mean anything to you? A good man is hard to find.
Oh.
Heard this phrase?
I mean, I agree.
Song, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm surrounded by two of the worst examples right now.
Two misses in this room with you right now.
And they are no good.
Is it like a Paul Young song or something?
I don't know.
Is that a good heart is hard to find?
What? I'm looking out because I didn't come across the song. Good Man is Hard to Find song written by African-American songwriter and later actor Eddie Green, first published in 1917. There you go. It is regarded as one of the classic blues standards from the Roaring Twenties.
The Roaring Twenties.
And I was thinking of a way lamer song, A Good Heart by Northern Irish singer Fergal Sharkey.
That is a great name.
You've absolutely pursued a different line of inquiry there, Matt Stewart. But it was worth it for Fergal Sharkey. I'm changing my name.
I know. That's
right now on my phone, deedpoll.com.au. Is Fergal Sharkey taken?
Google.
Yeah, they're like, yes, it's taken by the person who inspired you to call yourself Fergal Sharkey.
It's obviously, it must be referencing that song because the chorus does go, a good heart these days is hard to find.
Right, because this story came out in 1953. So I don't know if this title itself was inspired by that Roaring Twenties song, which has obviously been out for a long time.
Right.
But A Good Man is Hard to Find is a 1953 Southern Gothic short story by Flannery O'Connor.
Also a good name.
Yeah.
Great name.
Is this just going to be a string of good names? Is that what we're doing here?
I think we might have picked, when I'm thinking about the names in the actual story, I don't know if we're going to get.
Kind of the reverse of me. That's a double surname person. I'm a double first name.
Oh, right.
Us together would create one, probably two people.
I reckon it would create two people.
If you put me and another person together, I think alchemy would mean that two people would come out the other side.
You plus Flannery equals Fergal Sharkey.
Yeah. Wow, that good?
That good. O'Connor was born in Georgia in the US in 1925 and she wrote two novels and 31 short stories. Her writing often reflected her Roman Catholic faith and her work often centers around the relationship between individuals and God. Sadly, she died of lupus in 1964 at the age of just 39, the same condition that her father succumbed to. And apparently, even 39, she lived a lot longer than people had expected her to. So.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, so I was reading about lupus recently because actor, I think, from Only Murders in the Building has it, if I'm thinking that right.
Martin Short?
No.
Steve Martin?
Yeah, third one.
Selena Gomez.
Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
I think. But, yeah, I think the treatments have gotten better. I don't think there's a cure still. Because I don't heard the term, but I never knew what it meant. Anyway, is this relevant?
It's really relevant.
I try and bring every conversation back to Selena Gomez.
Yeah, well, I'm also proud of you for deep diving on some things and broadening your horizons and expanding your knowledge base, Dr. Matt Stewart.
Thanks so much, Kirstie, for giving me my full title and respect that I deserve.
Finally.
So she passed in 64, but her posthumously compiled Complete Short Stories won the 1972 US National Book Award for Fiction and has been the subject of enduring praise since then, been really on the map. She's regarded as a master of the short story form and is one of the foremost writers of Southern Gothic, which are stories set in the South in the US, but characterized by grotesque, macabre or fantastic incidents.
Ah. Wow.
I'm going to have one of those today, let me assure you.
I love fantastic incidents.
Yeah. I think we're having one right now.
You feel this fantastic incident?
This feels like we're in a slow motion fantastic incident.
A Good Man is Hard to Find is one of our most famous stories, and let's get into it now. Now, I always start with the opening couple of lines to get you into the scene, set the scene for Flannery O'Connor's work. And the opening line is, the grandmother didn't want to go to Florida. She wanted to visit some of her connections in East Tennessee, and she was seizing at every chance to change Bailey's mind. Bailey was the son she lived with, her only boy.
Okay.
And we're off.
Wow.
We're off.
This feels like we've started mid-conversation, you know, like when sometimes I'll be talking to a friend and I'll be like, what are you talking about? And I'll realize that I started the conversation in my head and then I just jumped straight in out loud to them midway through. It felt a bit like that. Or did I?
Yeah.
I just felt like she was off and racing. Like,
no, I reckon you're right.
She's already protesting. Hey, I don't want to go to Florida.
Wait, what?
Who are you?
Who are you?
What? And all we know is it's just the grandmother.
Yeah, because you already feel like you've missed heaps.
Yeah.
But there's nothing more before it.
This is the trick to her short story writing. She'd write full stories and then just chop a middle bit section out of it. There you go. There's a short story.
And you reckon just sort of like flick through and just put the finger on the page and go from there.
We'll start from there.
Start from there. The end.
Fuck. Name a shorter story. I dare you. I'll wait.
So in the story, we are in Atlanta, Georgia, where the grandmother tries to convince her son not to go to Florida, pointing to an article in the newspaper about a criminal who calls himself the Misfit, who has escaped from federal penitentiary and is apparently heading towards Florida. Gran says, you read it here, what it says he did to those people. Just you read it. I wouldn't take my children in any direction with a criminal like that loose in it. I couldn't answer to my conscience if I did.
No direction. Oh, let's go through them. Would you take them south?
As long as it's not south to Florida, yeah.
All right, what about north?
Perfect, yes, I would. Straight to Canada. Yes, please.
She fell at the first hurdle there, didn't she? I wouldn't take them in any direction. North? Sum me up. I didn't even get to nor by nor something.
Nor by nor west.
Nor by nor west.
Her son Bailey ignores her pleas, and Grandma changes tact and says, but the kids, they've already been to Florida. Again, she's ignored by Bailey and also by his wife who's feeding the baby. The wife is referred to as the mother. We never learn her name, but she's described as whose face was as broad and innocent as a cabbage.
Wow.
Oh, that is so sweet.
That is quite nice. I'm going to put that on my bio for my show next year.
As a cabbage.
As a cabbage.
I thought, I'm like, this could go anyway because it's really going to all hinge on the final word.
Yeah.
Like if it was as broad as the sunshine, you know, you'd be like, wow, that seems nice. As a cabbage. Less nice.
Interesting.
I don't think cabbage is a good go-to. No. But I wouldn't use it for someone. I think it would be quite upsetting.
Cabbage.
You know, Dave Warnicki is a lovely guy. He's got that sweet head like a cabbage.
What a lovely cabbage face.
Real cabbage-like qualities.
He stinks.
That is what you think of, isn't it? Like, uh-oh.
Smells like cabbage.
Yucky.
Then their 8-year-old son, who's named John Wesley. What do you think of that name?
I don't like it, but
I do.
Okay.
Okay, 50-50 on John Wesley.
Yang? We are yin and yang. That's why Dave's got us on.
Of the same coin.
Yeah. John Wesley.
Heads or tails?
Tails.
Damn, me too.
Have you forgot how that game works? We've got 8-year-old John Wesley says to Grandma, if you don't want to go to Florida, why don't you stay at home?
Oh.
Smart ass kid.
Yeah.
Oh.
Mm.
I thought they were just bringing you info. Oh, I hadn't thought of that. Yeah. Not a bad call.
And all the dialogue is written with the southern accent in there. So don'tcha's D-O-N-T-C-H-A. Don'tcha stay at home. The even younger daughter, June, jumps in and says she wouldn't stay at home for $1 million, afraid she'd miss something. She has to go everywhere we go. So these kids are immediately sassing their grandmother.
Right.
No one listens to her. No one listens. She can't get no respect from these kids. And the next day, when they're off to Florida, she's the first in the car with her cat named Pity Singh sitting in a basket.
Can you please spell Pity Singh?
P-I-T-T-Y. That's the first name.
Mm.
Second name, capital S-I-N-G, Pity Singh.
I just cannot believe that someone's cat has the same name as my cat.
What are the chances? You're going to have to get on deedpoll.com again and change the cat's name.
Lucky I opened up an account earlier. P Pity Singh.
Pity Singh.
It's a bit wordy, isn't it?
I don't think it's a great cat name, to be honest.
Doesn't roll off the tongue. You don't want the cat to go missing. Pity Singh. Pity Singh.
Pity Singh.
Yeah, it sounds like you're saying pissing.
Yeah, pissing.
It does, doesn't it?
Pity Singh.
Pity Singh. Pity Singh.
Just outside, right? Pissing. Pissing. Pissing.
I warned you, I'm pissing.
In a house where they're calling people John and June.
Pity Singh.
Like all of a sudden, and the mother.
And grandma.
Yeah. And then Pity Singh has come from nowhere.
The cat's got the most interesting name.
Really, it's kind of growing on me, if I'm honest.
Yeah, I like it.
Pity Singh.
Pity Singh.
Pity Singh. I'm going to call both of you Pity Singh from now on.
Pity Singh. Sorry.
I'm going to call Dave Pity and you Singh.
Okay.
Pity Singh.
Call me anything other than cabbage. I'll be happy. So grandma's in the car. She's got Pity Singh in the basket. She's all dressed up with a hat and a dress. Her collar's all trimmed in lace. And it says, quote, "In case of an accident, anyone seeing her dead on the highway would know at once she was a lady."
That's important.
So she's...
As in like posh?
Yeah.
Or as in a woman?
She wants to leave like... No, as in like an upper class. Right. I'm leaving a well-dressed corpse.
I thought you meant a woman as well.
Oh, right. No, I think it's more like... So she's a, you know... A Southern Belle.
I ain't no dame. I'm a lady.
Yeah.
Is dame different from a lady in that sense? No, dame's also classy, isn't it? Damn it. I'm no broad. I'm a lady.
All right. Now you're getting
Now I'm getting close.
Now you're doing it.
Grandma is sitting in the back seat in between the two older children, so June and John Wesley, who still sass her and the world around her. John Wesley says, "Let's go through Georgia fast so we don't have to look at it much."
Home of the peach?
Yeah. And grandma's like, "If I were a little boy, I wouldn't talk about my native state that way. Tennessee has the mountains and Georgia has the hills." Trying to really big it up a bit. John Wesley says, "Tennessee is just a hillbilly dumping ground and Georgia is a lousy state too." And then June, the younger daughter, says, "You said it." So they're really bagging out.
But yeah, they're working together as a team, which is nice.
Yeah, that is nice. It's
brought unity.
Yeah.
That's right, a common enemy, grandma.
It does feel like if you're trying to talk something up going, "What do you mean? Georgia's great. Tennessee's got the mountains. Georgia's got small mountains." Why'd you go Tennessee in the mountains?
Well, no, you could have picked anywhere.
Nebraska's flat. We've got hills.
Yeah.
Then all of a sudden the hills sound great.
Yeah, that's
But when
true.
You've just talked about mountains,
you've started high.
It'll sound like I would, you know, I
who cares?
Go there to have a piss, a pity sing,
a pissing,
pissing down this mountain or hill,
pissing or hill.
So they're not very nice. I have to say, Grandma herself isn't great either. She makes some pretty racist remarks in the car.
No, Grandma.
And it's pretty grim stuff too. But the kids pass the time by reading comics, eating, and then eventually they get bored enough to play a classic car game. Guess the shape of the cloud.
Ooh.
When you see a cloud, see if you see the same thing as me. And it says, John Wesley took the shape of a cow. And June Star guessed a cow. And John Wesley said, "No, it's an automobile." And June Star said he didn't play fair. And then they began to slap each other over Grandma.
Over Grandma?
Yeah, so she's in the middle. So they're just bashing
each other. Physically over her.
Yeah.
I reckon they chose the wrong game. Mm. And they should have been playing corners the whole time.
Corners, great. What about car cricket?
That really would...
Car cricket?
The corners would crush Grandma.
Which is good, though, because Grandma's racist. Yeah.
But she's also in prime position in the middle. She gets to do all the crushing and not so much of the being crushed.
Oh, okay,
middle spot's a good spot.
That's true. I was I visited Canberra recently and my nieces live there. They're 12 years old. They're twins. And I was in the back seat of the car with them and suddenly they... wanted to play corners and I was like, absolutely not. I was like, I'm an old lady. I was like, I'm not playing corners. But then I realised that wasn't going to deter them. So I was like, if you can't beat them, join them.
You can't beat them, crush them.
Absolutely. Like I went absolutely ham. Like just lost my mind and they're probably still in the car right now smeared against the window.
Yeah. They are now a schmear.
They're a schmear. I absolutely got them. Like I just saw red.
What a lesson they've learned.
They've learned a huge, a massive lesson.
Don't come for Kirsty.
Don't come for Auntie Kirsty. She will smash you.
You get in the car, you're like, you guys want to play another round of corners? No, please.
Please, no.
No.
Just for context as well, like they're 12, but they're about the same height as me. So
okay.
I didn't have a massive physical advantage over them.
Just
like I don't want you to you know, see these experience tiny small advantage. Children.
I was imagining a couple
it's
of,
experience.
I was imagining a couple of preps, absolutely.
Yeah.
Begging for their love. You wanted to play.
Yeah, it was an experience advantage and just unbridled fury in the belly advantage, I would say. Mm. Yeah, anyway, I don't know what happened. I don't know what the result was because I blacked out.
The mist descended.
The same thing happened to the grandma. The mist came down and she went, oh, sorry, June bug.
June's crushed against the wood.
June bug? June puddle now. June splat.
It's a June pity thing.
The family stopped for lunch at a place called The Tower, run by a man named Red Sammy. And his billboards line the highway and it says in capital letters, this is what they say, try Red Sammy's famous barbecue. None like famous Red Sammy's. Red Sam, the fat boy with a happy laugh, a veteran, Red Sammy's your man.
Wow.
And the advertising obviously works because the family stops there for lunch.
It sounds absolutely frantic.
Yes.
Like Red Sammy sounds like he's got something to hide.
He's saying, take this down. He's saying to his secretary, take this down. I got an idea. Yeah.
Red Sammy, definitely the best food in town. Red Sammy, nothing to hide here. Red Sammy, get in, nothing suspicious. Come on.
Don't look out the back.
Selma, no one never heard of it.
You said there were no good names in this episode.
Oh, I forgot about Red Sammy.
Red Sammy
and
sick.
Pity Sing.
Pity Sing.
I forgot about Pity. I was just thinking of John Wesley and Grandma. They're the two that popped into my head when you
were. Yeah, the grandma's good as well. It paints a real picture. Yeah.
The grandma.
What's her story?
Where does she fit into the family?
She got kids. We'll never know. Little June asked for a song to be put on the jukebox so she can do a little tap dance routine for everyone.
Oh, she sounds like a nightmare.
Red Sam's wife leans over the counter and says, ain't she cute? Would you like to be my little girl? June Star says, no, I certainly wouldn't. I wouldn't live in a broken down place like this for $1 million.
$1 million.
I'm quite fond of sassy June.
Yeah, me too.
Like she's absolutely not putting up with anyone's bullshit.
No, and I think Red Sammy's wife is too because she repeats, ain't she cute? After she's just been had her ass handed to her.
That's good. That's the only way you can reply.
You gotta be like,
isn't she a sweet old thing? She's like, hey, Red Sammy's wife, how about you die? What a little sweetheart.
Yeah. Oh, you're adorable. Yeah.
Isn't she funny?
Grandma starts making convo with Red Sammy and she's asks him, have you seen the misfit? The man who's broken out of jail and, you know, is all over the papers. And Red Sammy says, a good man is hard to find. Everything is getting terrible. I remember the day you could go off and leave your screen door unlatched. Not no more. So that's where the title comes from.
Thanks, Dave.
Title alert.
What year was this?
1950. Well, when's it set? I believe it's set in contemporary time of writing, which is the 50s, 53.
Right, yeah. So that was when things started going awry. That's when you could no longer trust people. Because I heard it happen at some point, so it happened in the 50s. There you go.
Yeah, that's right.
Can't even leave your door unlatched anymore.
So before then's the good old days.
Yes.
Anything after that, definitely not.
The bad new days.
Exactly.
Yeah, the bad new days have been around for a while now.
Remember the bad new days of 1961?
The bad new days are like coming up to their... Wait, what's that word? Oh, no. What? 100
centenary?
Yes, centenary!
Oh, I gotcha.
Gee, that was snappy, Kirsty. Thanks for coming on the pod.
Dave will edit this down and make it sound good.
No.
Honestly, edit out most of it.
Just say centenary, I'll get it nice and clear.
Centenary.
Perfect, we got it. Never listen back. So the family hits the road once again. They'll leave behind Red Sammy, and Grandma thinks she recognizes the area as having a plantation that she visited as a child with a large, beautiful mansion. She wants to see it again, but knows her son Bailey won't want to take a detour, so she comes up with a little lie to get the children on board. She says, oh, yeah, there's a mansion around here. And then she says, quote, there was a secret panel in this house, and the story went that all the family silver was hidden in it, but never found. And the kids are like, we have to find this secret panel. And they start pestering their dad to drive there. And the dad's like, absolutely not. But June starts to scream. And John kicks the back of his seat until his dad, Bailey, gives in.
Is that the first you've mentioned the dad? I don't remember there being a dad.
Do you remember at the start, the first line was, Grandma didn't want to go to Florida. She was begging her son Bailey to let her go to Tennessee.
Oh, yes.
So yeah, that.
So yes, he was brought up straight
but
away.
He hasn't really been mentioned much since then because he's just pretty quiet. He's like I imagine like a quiet, angry dad who's just sitting in the driver's seat, blocking out the whole family.
Yeah, yeah. I'll turn this car around.
Exactly. Keep it down back there. I'll turn this car around, you little so-and-sos. But eventually.
Language.
But eventually, so I'm so sorry.
So-and-so.
To all the so-and-sos listening, I apologize.
Oh my goodness. I'm so sorry. This is a safe space for so-and-sos, by the way. I just want people to know that Matt and I are so-and-so inclusive, even though Dave made it sound like the podcast wasn't a safe space for so-and-sos.
But I appreciate you being here because now we're two-thirds so-and-so positive, so I think I'm on the right side of history here, even though these aren't the good old days.
The bad new days.
Terrible.
Also, by the way, Bailey, the father, shouldn't have rewarded bad behaviour by changing his mind about going to
Absolutely.
The plantation.
And I think the kid kicks the chair so hard he says, all right, but never do that again.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
like, that'll show him.
Yep.
They'll never do it again.
Oh, yeah.
A lesson has been learned here today. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's funny. Good parenting. Yeah.
I'm only giving him this once and I get the feeling he's given in his whole life.
Yeah.
I'll give in if you apologize for kicking. No, I won't. All right. Well, next time you'll apologize, though.
Yeah.
No.
And
all right.
Don't think
Well, let's leave it at that.
Don't.
No. Yeah. Okay.
Don't you think I've given in even though we're doing the thing you want to do now?
No.
I wanted to do it as well.
I just changed my mind. It was a coincidence that I keep changing my mind to do what you want to do, but I wanted to do it first.
I wanted to do it first.
Good talk.
Yeah.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
So grandma tells them they've got to turn around and go down a dirt road, which Bailey, the dad, is not pleased about. But grandma keeps directing. She says, just over here, just over here, just up these hills. I'm pretty sure it's on the right coming up. But then grandma has a horrible thought. The thought is so embarrassing that she turns red in the face, her eyes dilate and her feet jump up, knocking her suitcase, which startles the cat who jumps.
Pity sing. Pity sing.
Pity sing. I imagine starts pissing everyone. It's terrifying.
Yeah, would have.
It jumps onto Bailey, the driver, the
this
dad.
This feels like she set off a Rube Goldberg.
Exactly.
Just one thing's nudged the next.
A lot of things have been set in motion by grandma going, she kicks the cat, basically jumps onto the driver and, quote, the children were thrown to the floor and their mother, clutching the baby, was thrown out the door onto the ground.
Whoa.
The old lady was thrown into the front seat. The car turned over once and landed right side up in a gulch. Which is, I've never heard that word before. I love it. I think it's a ditch off the side of the road. Bailey remained in the driver's seat with a cat grey striped with a broad white face and an orange nose clinging to his neck like a caterpillar.
Wow.
So they've had this horrific accident.
So, wait. And this is because the grandma remembered something.
Yeah, she's had a horrible thought. Any guesses onto what grandma's realised?
She's like, oh, this is the place where the misfit lives. We shouldn't go there because the misfit's there. It's his mansion.
Okay. Kirstie, any thoughts on what could set off this horrible chain of events?
Oh, no. To be honest with you, I got really hung up on gulch.
Mm. It's so hard to not get hung up on, isn't it?
I know. Like the whole time you were asking Matt what his theory was, I was just going gulch over and over in my head. Yeah. Where ordinarily I would have been thinking about what my answer was about to be. But so gulch.
Your answer is gulch?
Yeah. I'm wondering if maybe she realised that she'd forgotten about Kevin.
Kevin.
Maybe.
Gulch.
Well, let me tell you that the horrible thought she had before the accident was that the house she had remembered so vividly was not in Georgia, but in Tennessee.
Oh, okay.
So that's not horrible enough to set off that chain of events.
It absolutely is not. No. Absolutely is not.
To throw the family into a gulch.
Yeah, to throw the mum out the window, basically.
Yeah, that's bananas. So grandma, get your act together.
Come on, it's not that bad.
No.
So they've been in this horrible car accident. Thankfully, in the scheme of things, the mother and the baby have been flung from the car and the baby's got a scratch and the mum's got a suspected broken shoulder. in the scheme of things, they could have been a lot more injured.
Could have, but that's
pretty bad in the middle of nowhere.
It's pretty bad. It's pretty bad.
In the 50s, like before doctors had been invented.
Yeah. All the doctors back then were leeches.
The good old days.
Yeah. Dr. Leech.
And I'm thinking, how are the kids taking it? Well, quote, it says, "We've had an accident," the children screamed in a frenzy of delight. "But nobody's killed," June Star said with disappointment as the grandma limped out of the car. What is wrong with
that
these children?
That is pretty full on.
Yeah.
I reckon it's hectic.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd think the misfit is the least of their concerns at this stage.
Yeah. It turns out that, June is the misfit all along.
I reckon. Absolutely. In cahoots with John.
Yes. Oh, like trench coat on top of each other's shoulders sort of thing?
Yeah, that's not a misfit. That's two children in a trench coat.
No one's seen these two children and the misfit in the same place at the same time.
Exactly.
I'm not sure if they could be on top of each other's shoulders, actually, now that I say it.
Well, how do you think the mum broke her shoulder?
They're just sort of rolling down the hill on top of each other's shoulders.
Everyone survived, but they're sitting in a ditch or a gulch.
A gulch.
In the middle of nowhere, quote, "The grandmother decided that she would not mention that the house was in Tennessee."
Yeah, I think that's probably the best.
So now she knows.
Yeah, but she's like, "I'm not going to bring it up."
Yeah.
I would be wondering, "Grandma, why did you kick the cat into the driver?" But no one says anything.
But it's been the grandmother. I thought you said the mother at some point. It's the grandmother who was taking them to the mansion. She's the one that realized that the mansion isn't down this random dirt road.
Yeah.
What is she doing?
Grandma's absolutely off her tits.
She's cooked this whole trip.
I think that she's kind of like nervous because no one ever listens to her, and then she's finally got them to do something, and then she's like, "Oh no, I'm so embarrassed."
Right.
It's not even down here.
But what she should be doing is just seeing the first mansion, going, "There it is.
There it is. Let's go.
Yeah, no one knows what mansion it is anyway.
No one knows, Grandma.
She's worrying about the wrong things. She should be worrying more about her racist little mouth.
Yes, for sure. Absolutely. But then a car passes and Grandma waves them down. It's carrying three men who get out and they all have guns.
Oh, no, it's a misfit and his mates.
Wait, we don't know that.
No, I've got a feeling in my waters.
Okay.
I've got a feeling in my gulch.
I've been wondering where the gulch was. Oh, okay. I'm still wondering.
This grandma, she's stuffing everything up.
Yeah,
every single move she makes is a disaster.
Put a plan into action, and every time it's like, "Grandma, just sit this one out. Sit in the gulch and shut the hell up."
She's a menace.
Yeah, she really is.
This story should be called The Misfit and the Menace.
Yeah.
Grandma's the menace.
I picture the end of this story being the misfits going, "Oh, well, just leave us alone, Grandma. Stop making suggestions.
You're so bad. Your luck is so bad, please."
Yeah.
So the men, they get out. They've got guns. The men don't speak, but the driver, the older of the three men, who is completely shirtless but wearing glasses.
Hot.
Can you imagine that? Looks familiar to Grandma, like someone she knows but can't remember where from. Oh, well, I guess that's probably not important. Anyway, the man comes down the bank.
Plot twist.
Who could it possibly be? Who could it be? Red Sammy from the diner? Come back.
She went to school with him. Yeah. It's just some guy.
Yeah, it's some guy. Trevor? Is that you?
Yeah.
I didn't recognize you without your shirt.
Yeah,
famous Trevor shirt.
When she was 14, she worked in the deli at Coles with him.
Yeah. Trevor. I didn't recognize you without your name badge that said, "Hi, I'm Trevor."
Yeah. Gee, those things are useful.
Do you recognize me without my name tag that says, "Hi, I'm Grandma"? No? It's me, Grandma.
Grandma, Trevor says. We could write the end of this book.
The man comes down the bank and speaks to the family. He says, "Good afternoon. I see you all had a little spill." It turns out the three men had seen the accident happen from a distance and they've driven up to see what's going on. John Wesley, the annoying kid, asks why the men have guns and what they plan to do with them. The man with the glasses says kids make him nervous and asks their mother to gather the kids up and all sit together. And just at that moment, quote, the grandma shrieked. She scrambled to her feet and at once stood staring, said, "You're the misfit. I recognized you at once."
Well, that's not true.
It's not
She's
true.
She's lying.
She's a liar.
No, you had a little delay, Grandma.
Yeah. She's also like, hold that info back.
Shut the hell up, Grandma.
They might not want you to know that they're bad guys, and they won't behave in that manner if you don't give away that you know.
Well, the response from the misfit is, yes'm, the man said, smiling slightly as if he were pleased in spite of himself to be known. But it would have been better for all of you, lady, if you hadn't have recognised me.
See, Matt was right.
You're right.
Which is alarming to me that Matt knows so much about the inner workings of the misfit.
It was so good that the time I was right was caught on tape.
Yeah, we've got it. We've got it.
Misfit Stewart strikes again.
So misfit confirmed. Everyone starts to freak out a little and Grandma says, you wouldn't shoot a lady, would you? His response is, I would hate to have to.
Touche.
That's a good line.
That's a sick line. Look what you made me do.
Yeah. Grandma says, listen, I know you're a good man. You don't look like you have common blood. I know you must come from nice people. And the misfit says, yes, ma'am. Finest people in the world. God never made a finer woman than my mother, and my daddy's heart was pure gold. And Grandma says, you shouldn't call yourself the misfit because I know you're a good man at heart. I can just look at you and tell.
Grandma.
Shh.
She's trying to
reverse psychology.
Trying to butter him up a bit.
Yeah. I'm picturing her like fanning herself at the time. Yeah. Doing that thing with her eyelids.
Fluttering her eyelashes.
Yeah, you wouldn't
really, her eyelids. Her lids. She's really getting her lids
flapping
to work
up. Flapping her lids around.
You wouldn't hurt a little old lady, would you?
Yeah, little old lady like me. Yeah, my big strong gentleman like you.
And he's like, yeah, I'd hate to have to. Okay.
Yeah, I reckon Grandma needs to stop talking.
Yes, just zip it up.
Zip it up.
One of the other men, whose name is Hiram, yells out that he's at the top of the ditch. He says, it will take half an hour to fix the crash car. And the misfit says to Bailey, the father, and John Wesley, the boy, he says, well, first you and Bobby Lee, get him, point to them, and that little boy to step over yonder with you. The boys want to ask you something. So he says to the kid and the dad, just go off with this. Accomplice here?
Is the grandma spoken for?
Yeah. Put in a good word with grandma. I've got a connection. I can feel something here. So the accomplice Hiram grabs Bailey, the dad, who is wearing a yellow shirt with blue parrots on it. Okay, remember that? And he guides him and John Bailey, the son, into the woods over yonder. The misfit says, no, I ain't a good man. And then he apologizes for being shirtless. He said he had to bury his clothes when they escaped the prison, that they're wearing clothes that they, quote, borrowed from other people they met along the way. But I guess they didn't have any shirts, so he's just shirtless.
Yeah, they borrowed the clothes off a lifeguard or something.
Yeah, only for pants only. Grandma then asks if the misfit if he ever prays, and he says no. And then two gunshots are heard in the forest.
Oh, God. Grandma,
oh gosh!
Like now's not the time to talk about his religious habits.
Come on, Grandma.
Grandma's so chatty. I kind of respect it.
Yeah, just keeps talking. No
yeah,
matter
she's
what.
Like, anyway, I'm so scared of that gun. What's your star sign? Because you strike me as an Aquarius. Yeah.
Really, an Earth sign? I never would have picked it.
I never would have picked it.
The misfit continues to calmly talk about his life. It's very sinister, and I can imagine like Matthew McConaughey nailing the tension, sort of whistling through his teeth as he's talking here. He says, I never was a bad boy that I remember of, but sometimes, somewhere along the line, I'd done something wrong and got me sent to the penitentiary. I was buried alive. Turned to the right, it was a wall. Turned to the left, it was a wall. Looked up, it was a ceiling. Looked down, it was a floor.
I was in a room.
Wow. Yeah. I reckon he was in a room.
Look in front. It was an audience. I was in a theater.
Look behind me. There was a movie playing. Oh, no, it's a cinema and I'm in the way.
Down in front.
Yeah. Everyone's angry. I got to get out of here.
He says he can't remember why he was put in jail. He was told it was for killing his father, but he's like, I don't think I did that. The old lady says, if you would pray, Jesus would help you. That's right, the misfit replies. And she says, well, then why don't you pray? He says, I don't want no help, as in help. I don't want no help. I'm doing all right by myself.
I like that.
Turned his back on the big man. Doesn't need no help.
Yeah. He seems to have it all together quite well. Mm. No assistance necessary. Yeah. He's semi-nude. So he's scantily clad, patrolling the countryside with guns in tow.
He's like, don't I look like I know what I'm doing?
Yeah, I'm perfectly capable, as demonstrated.
No, I can't dress myself. Buttons are very difficult, okay? Well, speaking of which, at that moment, the misfit's accomplice, Bobby Lee, returns from the forest dragging a yellow shirt with blue parrots on it.
He did steal it off a lifeguard.
He throws it to the misfit, who puts it on. Grandma thinks she recognises it but doesn't realise it belonged to her son, Bailey. So Grandma's not really putting two and two together here. My She's like, oh, I recognise that shirt.
He just walked away. There were gunshots. Brought the shirt back.
I think maybe she's panicking a bit, you know?
Right.
Not thinking straight. The misfit then quietly asks the mother and June Star to go with Bobby Lee into the forest. They're pulled off into the woods. The mother seems in shock and offers no resistance, but June says, I don't want to hold hands with him. He reminds me of a pig.
Ooh.
So little June Star is sassy right up until the end. There's a few more pistol shots, and Grandma says, Jesus, you've got good blood. I know you wouldn't shoot a lady. I know you come from nice. Pray, Jesus, you ought not to shoot a lady. I'll give you all the money I've got. And the misfit says, lady, there never was a body that give the undertaker a tip.
Yeah, it's such a funny way to bargain. If you don't kill me, you can have my money. Or I could do both.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll take both.
She hasn't once said, oh, don't kill my family either.
No.
As they're getting taken out one by one.
She's like, could I interest you in this small child and small girl? Yeah.
You've got what you came for. You didn't come here for a grandma.
A lady grandma.
Of good blood. And the misfit says, Jesus was the only one who ever could raise the dead. He says that if what Jesus did is true, then everyone must follow him. But if he didn't actually raise the dead, then all anyone can do is enjoy their time on earth by indulging in meanness. He says, there's no pleasure but meanness. He's like, I enjoy being a bad boy, doing bad things. The grandmother urges the misfit to pray with her. She sees the man's twisted face close to her own, this is a quote from the book, as if he were going to cry, and she murmured, why, you're one of my babies. You're one of my children. She reaches out to touch his shoulder, but the misfit springs back, and like a snake has bitten him, he recoils and then shoots her three times in the chest.
Wow.
Brutal. The two other gunmen return from the forest, and one of them, Bobby Lee, says, she was a talker, wasn't she? And the misfit replies, she would have been a good woman if it had been somebody there to shoot her every minute of her life.
I don't know if he knows how things work.
Yeah, that's a lot of bullets.
Yeah, and then after the first one or first handful, you're dragging her around? What's happening then?
Yeah, it's very impractical.
Yeah,
come on.
I mean, are we talking about her being shot every minute of her life up until the end of her life that she's led?
So every minute of her life, I guess they're just he's saying just kill her once. That's what he's done.
Yeah.
Yeah, a bit weird, this misfit guy.
The mitt. Gulch.
His friends call him mitt. It's fine.
So there's a pretty grim story you told us, Dave.
It's extremely grim.
I came into this studio having had a lovely day.
Beautiful sunshine outside.
I've never been more upset in my life.
Well, don't worry, because the final line comes after this is the final line. Bobby Lee says, some fun. And the misfit says, shut up, Bobby Lee. It's no real pleasure in life. And that's the end of the story.
Yeah, right.
There it is. A good man is hard to find. Would you agree?
I'm more
with Fergal Sharkey. It's hard to find.
I mean, that story has absolutely demonstrated that a good man is hard to find.
Mm, I don't think there were many good men in that book.
There were.
Yeah, no one came out of it seeming too good.
No, like Bailey was gormless. John was a petulant menace who was going to grow up to be a misfit himself. Misfit sucked, had two mates who sucked.
I think there's only one
Bobby Lee sucked.
Good character, and that was Pisting.
Pisting?
Yeah, Pisting.
Did cause the accident.
What about Red Sammy?
Red Sammy. I can't say a bad word about Red Sammy.
Red Sammy and Red Sammy's wife.
Yeah, you're right. Come on down to Red Sammy's, the big man with the red hair or whatever it was.
Yeah, everything's great at Red Sammy's. Don't ask any questions. Sit down and eat the delicious food at Red Sammy's.
Okay, Red Sammy's hiding something. You're right. I don't know.
But we've just inferred that. It wasn't actually. So exactly. I'd like to hold on to the fact that Red Sammy might be.
Yeah. Everyone else has demonstrated that they're definitely not good.
Yeah, absolutely. But Red Sammy, the best bloke in town. You heard it here first off Red Sammy himself. Best bloke. Come and eat at Red Sammy's. Nothing to see here. Don't even worry about it. I'm Red Sammy. I'm the best bloke.
Did you enjoy reading this, Dave?
How short was it, by the way?
It's, I think, about
two questions.
Maybe 20 pages or so.
Too many. And so sorry, Matt, to derail you.
The story is this awful family goes on a road trip, go on a detour for a thing that wasn't really there, and then get murdered.
Yeah.
But it's about the journey along the way.
See, I liked Matt's retelling because that was a genuinely short story.
Yeah, it doesn't get much shorter.
It's the journey along the way. So. Yeah. Also, I think it was a major plot flaw in having Pity Singh, like the granny launch Pity Singh at Bailey and then create, you know, this terrible chain of events that led to their murder.
Mm.
Like the Gulch. I just wanted to get into one more time.
But you mentioned, Gulch, I hadn't thought example. About it. Pity Singh might be the only survivor of the family. They never mentioned what happened to Pity Singh.
Also, yeah. Did we know what gender Pity Singh, what sex?
I don't think
Pity Singh was. Pity Singh was pregnant. Maybe as the years went by, her descendants ended up in the Otways. And that's who Kirsty saw.
Yeah.
Anyway, tune into my podcast. You'll never believe this, but available wherever you get your podcast.
The criminal's like, I'll let this cat go. Fend for itself, and it over the generations has become massive.
I wanted Pity Singh to be a bloke because then maybe it's the only good man in the story.
Oh, it could be. It absolutely could be.
Yeah.
Good man is hard to find, but a good cat.
Yeah, good cat man.
They're everywhere.
Yeah, everywhere. Everywhere. Pity Singh. Oh, yeah.
Now, a lot has been interpreted and written about the Catholic meaning at play here because she was a very Catholic woman, very Catholic writer, Flannery O'Connor. And especially people have talked about grace and forgiveness being a real theme here. The grandmother appears to be willing to give the misfit at the end a bit of forgiveness when she says, you're one of my own children. But it's also likely that she's just trying to save her own life or understandably just panicking. Or I thought maybe recognizing her son's shirt, finally being like, hang on, isn't that my son's shirt? Yeah, and she reaches out for it. But some say that she believes in redemption, but the misfit clearly does not, even if he's sure if Christ is real. And that the final line about being a good woman, if someone was there to shoot her every day, it's the only when she's at the end of her life with a gun in her face that she starts turning back to God and start being like, we've got to pray now, we've got to pray.
Yeah, yeah.
But a lot of people do that at the end of their life, don't you know.
Yeah.
You're going down on a plane, you're like, oh, time to open up a channel with the big man just in case.
That's
just
all you've got to do as well. Just got to ask for forgiveness and mean it and then everything's forgiven, isn't it? That's
I don't know, mate. You're the one sitting here looking like Jesus.
That's I don't know if that's just Catholicism, but that's.
It is because that's. Oh yeah, I was raised a Catholic until I was 12. That was my hard cutoff line.
Mm.
But yeah, we used to go to confession all the time. We just say all the screwed up things that you'd done since your previous confession.
It was a fresh start,
So then you could just go and wreak havoc on the neighbourhood again. Like, well, I've got a clean slate. All right, time to smash some windows and take some
stereos. Clapping your hands together, dusting off.
Yeah.
Ready to go.
Ready to go. My conscience is clear. It's
just like you've deleted a bunch of emails. You're like, look, got a clean inbox. I can fill this up with junk again.
Exactly.
Sort of. I'm trying to put it into terms that our listeners understand.
Yeah.
We're in the digital age.
The modern parlance.
They won't understand. They won't understand going to confession in a church, but they get how inboxes work.
Yeah. We've all got an inbox.
Some are larger than others, but we accept everyone's inboxes.
Absolutely. What do you think of this? Because I was looking into the meaning of it because I'm like, it's a very famous, quite an influential short story. So I'm looking on a few reviews of it and a few study guides. Study.com writes, "The moral lesson of A Good Man Is Hard to Find is that actions have consequences. The grandmother lies to her family continuously and unknowingly leads them into the path of the misfit. Her selfishness in wanting to see the plantation at the end leads to their senseless deaths." But I'm like, that seems a bit brutal.
Mm.
She wasn't intentionally lying. She just sort of made a mistake about where the mansion is located, had a bit of a panic, accidentally set off this chain of events. I don't feel like she deserved to be horribly murdered in a gulch.
Yeah, not in the gulch.
What do you think?
The gulch was a bridge too far.
That feels a bit much.
Yeah. I don't know, but also grandma wasn't a nice person.
No, not a nice person.
Yeah. No, I mean, I'm not saying that she deserved to die.
No, but and you're absolutely right. When one of you pointed out, I can't remember who said it, like that she never makes any case for her family.
Yeah.
To be like, to protect them or anything. She does very much.
I think she – I read between the lines that she actually used June and John as a human shield. Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, can you just stand here? And yeah. Can you stand here?
Yeah, come closer, Jim.
But unfortunately, she ran out of human shields as they took them down one by one. Like, oh, guess I'll have to be my own one now.
Yeah. I guess I'll have to try and pray here.
Oh, no, Grandma, you got it all wrong.
So, yeah, pretty grim story. I liked the scene when the misfit sort of like calmly but very menacingly talking about how, oh, no, I ain't no good person.
Hmm.
I could see that in my mind in like a movie or something.
Yeah, I can see that.
Very intense because you know something bad's going to happen.
Yeah.
Like the calm psychopath in a movie.
Yeah, the calmer they are, the more terrifying.
Yeah, you're like,
right?
Oh, wow, something bad's going to happen here.
Yeah.
And it did.
And it did. Yeah.
Who are your favourite characters, just quickly?
I'd say Pity Sing.
Yeah.
Yeah, Pity Sing.
Yeah. I would say The Gulch.
The Gulch.
Yeah, no, good point. I'd say probably Georgia, the hills.
Well, why go to the hills when Tennessee has the mountains?
Oh, true. But we're already here at the hills.
Yeah, may as well.
May as well.
So we always end the episode by giving it a score out of 5, as you've heard it here today, whether you liked it, loved it, or it was nothing to you. How do you feel about A Good Man Is Hard to Find, Kirsty?
I'll give it a 4.
Give it a 4? Solid 4?
Yeah, because I was interested. You know,
that's the thing. I found it interesting because I'm thinking, where is this going? And by the end, you go, okay, it went a really grim place. But the whole time, you're thinking, what's happening here?
Yeah, and at least it went somewhere. Like it wasn't, you know, just it didn't just like peter out.
Peter out,
it didn't and then, pity sing out.
Yeah.
You know, exactly. It built to a crescendo,
absolutely.
And I respect that. But I was interested. I think also your chipper approach to it did some heavy lifting,
yeah,
Dave.
But
definitely. I reckon a 4. I wasn't like, oh, my God, I can't believe I'm on this episode. Why?
Though I think Matt maybe was a bit more like that. It was a bit grim for you, I was sensing.
No, I was a bit dull, I think. But
okay, right.
And then, yeah, just it's sort of what was going to happen happened. There was no... I mean, I've been spoiled by M. Night Shyamalan, probably.
Oh, you wanted a real twist.
I don't think I've ever seen one of his movies, but...
The misfit pulls off their face and it's Red Samuel along or something.
Yeah.
You've been spoiled by the idea of M. Night Shyamalan. Like, I've never seen anything that he's done, but I'm aware of him. And that's
I've heard about The Sixth Sense. but, yeah, no, it was fine, but, yeah, I didn't really have enjoyed all that much, but yeah, like a 2.8.
A 2.8, very specific.
It's
okay.
So specific.
I respect it.
I was going to say 2.5, but that's 50%. It seems like it's better than that.
2.8, so
3
funny.
Felt too generous.
I want to know how they lost the 2.2 points.
Yeah.
What a fall from grace.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I was getting it on the Catholic level. Don't know about you guys.
But, yeah, no. Nah.
But as, like I said, as the misfit sinisterly spoke to the grandma, I was gripped. So I'm going to give it a 4 out of 5.
That's a good score.
Great.
I enjoyed it. And I've been wanting to do Flannery O'Connor on the show for a while. There's a couple of novels, but like this is the most one of her most famous stories. And yeah.
She coined a phrase anyway, at the very least.
And yeah, and I promised you something grotesque, macabre, or fantastical. And
well, the third one didn't maybe quite get there, but yeah.
You delivered mostly, and it got 10.8 points out of 15.
Yeah, okay.
That's a pretty good score.
I reckon it's pretty good.
Yeah.
Mm.
I think Flannery would be stoked.
I reckon.
Should we let her know?
Yeah, if you're listening, Flannery.
Let us know. But that's the end of the first episode back of Book Cheat. Thank you so much for joining me. Really appreciate you coming along.
Pleasure, mate.
Chatting a bit of flan. And Kelsey, if you want to check out your new podcast one more time, what's it called and where are we finding it?
You'll never believe this, but with Kirsty Webeck and Cal Wilson, it is wherever you get your podcast from, and you can give me a follow on social media at Kirsty Webeck on every platform.
Beautiful. And Matt, you and I are coming up to Brisbane real soon.
Yes, doing two stand-up on Saturday, Sunday night, second and third, and in the afternoons we're doing each other's podcasts.
That's right,
Saturday. Who knew Matt Stewart on the Saturday, perfect, which we're about to record an episode with Tom Cashman, which will be coming out this week as well, which I imagine is going to be a lot of fun. Last week was the 50th episode.
That's right.
And
so I mean, the live one might be 52.
I think, yeah, the live one might be 52.
Come down for the first birthday of Who Knew It on the Saturday afternoon.
53, much like the year Flannery was born.
Hey.
Wow. Mm. We have learned something here today. You've retained something. I appreciate that. And then on the Sunday, you can check out Book Cheat Live, also a Good Chat Comedy Club. And then afterwards, we'll be doing the stand-up show again.
Maybe not the year she was born. Maybe the year this book was out. Doesn't matter.
Yeah. Wasn't it set in the 50s? I don't know.
It was published in 1953.
She was a toddler author. 1953. Published.
She wrote a book as a newborn baby. This That's book actually was incredible. Born. Yeah.
That's why it's so famous.
Yeah. She was zero.
You're like, Matt's going, oh, this story's a bit, nothing happened. A baby wrote it, okay?
Yeah, she came out of the womb with a quill and a piece of parchment. That's incredible.
It did feel like a story that was, I don't know. Sometimes I'm like, I get that this is good. Smart, real smart people probably love it. I just don't get it. It's fine. Things happened. It ended with them getting murdered. I just feel like it's, if you're going to murder a whole family, I shouldn't be yawning through it.
Just murder the family.
You want to be entertained while a whole family is annihilated.
Come on.
Make it a bit of fun along the way.
Yeah. Let's have fun with it.
I get it.
Let's go for one more. I think we've got it. Let's go for one more take. You're killing the family. Let's have a little fun with it.
So, yeah, check out dogoonpod.com for tickets to the shows at Good Chat Comedy Club. But until then, I'll say thank you so much for listening. As we always say here at the end of Book Cheat, it's books forever! Yeah!
Book.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.